This week on A to Z Running, Under Armour pro runner Robert Downs joins the show to talk about rethinking change and obstacles. We answer listener questions about max heart rate as well as splitting runs between indoors and outdoors. In the world of running, last year's freshman phenom Addie Wiley has big news that involves Adidas. Nico Young has done it, and he might just be convincing the doubters, finally. And the upcoming 2024 Olympics boasts some fascinating statistics that we want to share with you. All this and more on A to Z Running. Welcome back to A to Z Running, where we're helping runners thrive with information, inspiration, and coaching training services. I'm Zach, and just a reminder that you can learn everything you need to know about what we do at A2ZRunning.com. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Spotify. Those are the most common places you can find our content. And it's only slightly ironic that Zach's the one saying that every week, since I don't even have a clue what it's like to follow someone on Instagram. Well, I know YouTube, I use YouTube plenty. Everybody on the planet uses YouTube plenty. But anyway, it's funny to me. Apologies, Andy's not with us again today. You're probably thinking it's getting old hearing Zach apologize for that. Well, I'm sorry that it happens, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. So that's just the kind of reality we live in these days. But we do have an amazing follow-up comment from a listener. This would be Stuart, who I'll put it in his words since he's the one who said it. He said, "I've been going back through your old podcast, and this morning I came across one where you discussed going off course during a race and asked if anyone has stories about this happening to them." And yes, we did in fact discuss that, because I do that a lot. not on purpose. But this is a great story. So here's what Stuart wrote. "I work at the Toyota plant in Cambridge, Ontario, and they put on a duathlon years ago. I was sitting in fourth place about 1 kilometer in, and there was a young kid volunteering that was supposed to tell people to make a right turn. I studied the course map and knew that we had to turn there, but I noticed the three guys ahead of me kept going straight. When I got there, I asked the kid if I was supposed to turn, and he said yes." Good move, Stuart. Always ask the course people, "Hey, where should I go?" So I made the turn. They protested after the race because the kid never said anything to them. He just let them run right by. Oh, man. Been there so many times. "I'm so glad I studied the course map. After I made that turn, the police car to escort the lead runner was sitting there waiting for me." Good sign when the escort vehicles are there. Just follow them. "The bike ride and second run went great, and I won the race. Congrats. Only time in my life I got to follow the police escort. That was super cool." Yeah, Stuart, that's what a story. I am glad you shared that. Thank you for sharing. And just can relate on so many levels to the other guys who didn't go the right way. And you benefited from your work ahead of time, knowing the course, which is, you know, advice number one when you're going to run somewhere is know where you're supposed to run. And yet, I don't follow that advice myself as often as I ought. So thank you for sharing. That's wonderful. And it just so happens that in the same note, Stuart also was sharing a question for the episode. And so we're going to be able to answer that too. So many thanks. We love the interactions. If any of you have thoughts like these, comments on the places where we have the stuff, like Instagram, among others, and we're always glad for that, and we'll share some thoughts as you are posting them as well. With that, let's get on to your questions. Just remember that you can share a question just like Stuart and Marjorie did today by going to our email address. You can just go and send an email to questions@A2ZRunning.com. Simple and easy. And if for whatever reason you have trouble remembering that, you can just go to A2ZRunning.com/questions as well. You get the point. The word questions with some A to Z running stuff in there somewhere, and you're probably going to find it. All right. That said, I want to share a question from Stuart here to start us off. And this question in particular comes with a fair bit of context, which is we are so glad for that. Thank you, Stuart, for including the details so we can answer more thoroughly. All right, it starts with a little backstory. A few weeks ago, I had a PR at Parkrun. Congrats. I love Parkruns. It was an out and back in Hamilton, Ontario, along the lake. Very good. It was cold and windy, so the first 2.5K out, Parkruns are 5Ks, in case anyone's curious. The first 2.5K out had a slight uphill with a strong wind in my face. Yikes, that just sounds really unpleasant. I made the decision that if I could maintain a good effort at the turnaround, I would push hard on the way back. That's a good strategy. When I'd have the downhill and the wind at my back. Good thinking. Well, as it turned out, I felt super strong at the halfway and decided to give it everything I had on the way back. And as a result, I ended up with a 40-second PR. Congratulations, Stuart. What a run. Later that night, however, he continues, I was checking my stats from my Fitbit and noticed my top heart rate was 180 during the run. I'm 54 years old, so according to the formula, my max heart rate should be 166. I told my partner about it, and she is convinced that due to my age, I'm sure to drop dead while I'm out running. Yeah. That's loving concern right there. Telling her my heart rate did not go over well. So my question is, if I'm pushing myself in a strong effort and I feel good, should I pay attention to this? I don't want to have to hold back when I have the potential to run strong just because I'm worried about my heart rate. I hesitate to ask my family doctor because he doesn't run and I'm sure he'd tell me to hold back. As a runner, I really don't want to do that. Should I ignore this information or should I pay some attention to it? Okay, first reaction. Don't ever make decisions about something based on what you think someone else is going to say before they've said it. That's rule number one in life with communication. You have to know what they're going to say before you should make decisions about what they're going to say. Now, that said, with the family doctor, that's probably also a safe prediction because that is the case. Most medical people without a sports background within it have a different perspective on these things than those with a sports background. Not to say that that would be the case with this in particular, but that is a common anomaly. So first thing I always have to say here, Stuart, is don't ever take our opinions as medical advice because they are not. And also, it would be a great idea to seek some additional expert advice on something like this just for more clarity, if nothing else. And a sports med specific specialist would be a good way to go for these kinds of things, certainly. And it even just helps all the more when you can find someone with a sports med background who also knows the sport of running, especially, or endurance sports in general, because there's a lot of similarities. But that aside, there are some things to consider here. First, max heart rate calculators are based on broad averages, and there are lots of individual anomalies. And so the fact that some individuals don't have the same max heart rate as the general calculator produces is not uncommon. I don't know if that's the case for you or not. They say it's mostly genetic, that it doesn't matter what you do, your max heart rate is what it is, and that's just it. But that doesn't mean that the calculator is accurate for you either. And it does tend to be the case that runners and cyclists, those two especially, have the tendency to be able to sustain efforts well beyond what is considered to be or should be their max heart rate without negative detriment. That's not to suggest that is always the case, but it seems to be a common anomaly within endurance sports. And so it begs the question, is there truly nothing you can do to influence your max heart rate, or is it, you know, chicken and egg? I don't know which came first. The other side of this is heart rate monitors are not perfect. And we know that, which means we don't know for sure if your heart rate monitor is reading 180, if your actual heart rate is 180, you know, if it's 172, for instance, which is within a margin of error there, that's a lot closer to that 166 predicted max heart rate from the calculator. And that puts us within a kind of tolerance of, it's mostly negligible. But that said, it's also true that just because that's the statistical maximum heart rate does not mean we can't actually get our heart above that. As a matter of fact, we very easily can get our heart above that. It's a question of whether it's healthy and safe to sustain a heart rate above maximum. And that's where the concern lies. So that's what your question is asking. And that's what I want to try to address here. In this particular instance, what to expect and how to navigate it. So the first thing here is we see this constantly. ourselves individually and with our own athletes. So I'm in my mid 30s and routinely see heart rates in the 190 to 200 range, which shouldn't be a common anomaly for someone in the mid 30s age wise. So that seems to be something that happens. And another instance, we work with a number of runners, older ages who do marathons. And so someone in between 60 and 70 years of age shouldn't be able to run a marathon at in the 150s for their heart rate. And yet we have multiple athletes who do that. Not necessarily that, you know, they don't always try to have a heart rate that high, but it happens, and it happens for miles and miles. And so what do we take away from this? The first consideration that we apply always with this kind of stuff is pay more attention to how you feel than what the watch is saying to you, because you can certainly tolerate, you can certainly tolerate something that's within a healthy range, whether or not the watch says that it is. And so you know this more by how you feel than what the watch says. The other side of that is that we know that there's fluctuations. And so if the watch says, well, it read 180 at a couple different points, but that was like for 2 seconds, it peaked up that high and then it was in the 160s most of the time, you're really not running at 180 heart rate. You know, that's likely things like statistical flukes within the technology, a bad reading for a moment. It's also just as likely things like, you know, there is a moment where things accelerate and then they settle again. That's pretty common in general within activity. So I don't think that a statistic like that makes me afraid that I might be at risk of something here. But I think you should corroborate that opinion by reaching out to someone like a sports med, or if you don't have direct access to that, even, you know, talk to your doctor. Don't be afraid to hear what the doctor has to say about it, but bring up the question. You know, that's what my heart rate monitor said, but that's not, I mean, that doesn't mean that I was actually running at that the whole time. And also, here's how I felt. And that's a key piece in that conversation, because the doctor could say you should never run above your max heart rate, but if you say, but running above my max heart rate feels fine when I'm doing it, what does that tell us? That should be important information. So that's the way I would go, or some thoughts to consider. I hope that's helpful, Stuart. Thank you for asking. Next question is from Marjorie. And this question in particular is timely for anyone who is trying to figure out how to deal with weather shifts and anomalies, for good, bad, or otherwise. So we're talking about splitting time on your run. And here's what Marjorie asked. What are your thoughts on splitting time on the treadmill and outside? So this morning, I ran 30 minutes on the treadmill and then finished the remaining 60 minutes of my run outside for a total of 90. This made it slightly more bearable, but also didn't have to endure the elements for too long, for as long. It was cold when she was writing this. And should be noted, there was further context in the explanation. She was worried about winter training seems to derail progress because it's harder to train in a quality manner, which is absolutely true. And so she's worried that that's slowing things down in her progress. So first, Marjorie, that's very possible. It could be slowing down your progress, but there's also nothing that we can do about that. We can't change what the winter is doing to us. We could all certainly have make efforts to have better access to indoor facilities that have like large indoor tracks to run on that aren't just treadmills, things like that. Those are all possibilities, but they're just impractical. And I wouldn't even, as someone who has pursued access to those things in the past and utilized them, the inconvenience is so high that I'm just not willing to take it. Even for achieving big personal goals, it's just not worth it to me. And so what it means is winter may mean just a little bit less quality training. I'm not too worried about it because it's really only a little bit, and it's not even the whole entire winter. We understand this. And depending on where you live, weather has a lot of different anomalies to it. But in almost every instance, it's not like consistently one thing for long periods of time. You know, the worst we get in West Michigan where we live is, you know, it gets frigid cold and just crazy snow and ice for like a week. And then it adjusts a little bit and the roads get clear for a while, and or it, you know, melts, everything thaws suddenly, all of that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, if I lose a week or two at a time here and there in terms of quality, and I'm still able to get in regular doses of, you know, high volumes, like regular volumes of the training, That's good. That's fine. And so then we look for strategies that help us achieve those regular doses. And the split is one that many do. And I don't think it's a terrible thing. The only concern with splitting the run between indoors and outdoors is how much downtime is there moving from the one to the other. So for instance, I think it's actually easier to go from outside to inside because you're already warm. You don't necessarily have to take off too many layers. You know, if you're going down onto a, not down, but if you're going onto a treadmill, if it's in a basement, you are going down. But if you're going onto a treadmill from outside, you can usually keep some of your long sleeves on, like the bottom layers. You don't have to like shed everything down to shorts kind of thing. So, you know, strip off jackets and gloves and hats and then just go run on the treadmill. And if you get too hot, you know, you can certainly deal with that. But the point is, I do think there's an easier way to do it that's quick. If it takes 20 minutes to move from treadmill to outside, then I'm losing some of the important stimulus in terms of a sustained stimulus. So there's a consideration there, but it certainly is an option and worth doing. There's other ways to go about that too. And that's, you know, certainly like find a facility that has some kind of track in it and go back and forth between the treadmill and the track. And the reason why I say that is because most indoor facilities with a track, save for the really, really high end ones in terms of like college facilities and such, most of them just, it's just not a big enough track to be a good idea to run for a long time in one direction, turning sharp corners. So you go back and forth. But if I'm going indoor to outdoor in inclement weather where I have to change what I'm wearing, things like that, yeah, I think it's fine. Just, you know, try to be mindful of how long it takes me to make that transition. And if I can do it quickly, you know, it's the whole thing. Like if I'm going inside to outside, I set everything out on the ground next to the door to outside. And so I'm on the treadmill and I can jump off the treadmill and just start peeling stuff on as I'm making my way outside. And I can do that really quickly. The other side of that is because you're already warm, if you do it that way, then you run the risk of not putting on enough because you feel like you're already warm. And then you get outside, you end up really cold because your sweat starts getting cold and such. So it's that, you know, make sure that you dress the way that you should for the thing. And that's another reason why I feel like it's easier to go from outside to inside than inside to outside. Okay, Marjorie, thank you for asking, and thank you both for submitting questions this week. We always appreciate the chance to hear your thoughts and to respond to them as best that we can. So be sure to email us questions at a2zrunning.com. Send your email to the address questions at a2zrunning.com. Now let's move on to something else helpful. As promised, we are going to, I guess you could say, conclude our reflection on the topic of change with an interview and an individual who has plenty to say about the topic. So Andy is talking with Robert Downs here. And let me tell you a little bit about Robert. Pro runner for Under Armour with Mission Run Baltimore. That's the running group that I had the chance to interact with a bit in the fall. So we've talked about them a little bit. Willie Fink was on the show a little while back. He's part of that crew as well. Robert's a middle distance runner with a 146 800 meter personal best. He competed in the U.S. Championships, advancing all the way to the finals, was his best finish, top eight, and then went on to represent Team USA at the USA versus Europe meet. Impressive statistical achievements. This is great, Robert. But beyond the stats, Robert's got an uncommon path to professional running, and it's an interesting story. It's part of the reason why we're excited to share this with you. Rife with big adjustments and tragic disappointments, as these things can be, and yet still was able to move to the next level, the next step, the next whatever is the next right choice to make. So here in the discussion, we're really excited to hear Robert talking about rethinking challenges and obstacles, to share changing our expectations around change as well. So some lessons to learn here from Robert's story. Let's get on to the interview with Robert Downs.
Hi, Robert. Welcome to the A to Z Running Podcast.
Hi, nice to meet you. And it's so excited to be here.
Nice to meet you too. We're so excited to dive into your story and how that pertains to change, which you've had a lot of in recent years. And also just kind of getting deep, even though we're just meeting each other. We appreciate you being open to having this conversation with us.
Yes. It's like I said, excited to be here, and I just feel like it's important to me to, tell my story as I have what people might think an unconventional path, to becoming a professional and, getting into the USA ranks and things like that. So I'm excited to speak about it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Robert, would you mind just starting us off with college? I know you probably had a lot of change before that, but getting into college, you had quite a bit of change. Would you talk us through that?
Yes, so I went to four different schools in college, and the main reason for that was just trying to find the best fit running wise. So I always had dreams, aspirations of becoming a professional. That belief probably didn't become realistic till later in my years, but I always moved in that way in a sense. So graduating out of high school in Philadelphia, my first move was walking on to Temple University, which is a D1 program. So I wanted to give myself the best opportunity. And for me at that time, I felt like a D1 university with all the resources and, good coaches and things like that, I just felt that was the best opportunity for me. So even coming out of high school as a 157, 800 runner, I still wanted to go D1. So I tried my luck at Temple University. Things didn't quite work out there, and that was 100% me. I don't think I was mentally ready at that time, so I was kind of slacking in the classroom and things like that. And so grades didn't work out there, and then at the same time, Temple University actually cut the men's team. So as I was trying to get myself back together after the first year, there was nothing to come back to at Temple University. So what I did was I went to a local community college in Philadelphia, got my grades together, and my goal from there was to go to a Division I university as well. And at the same time, I'm training basically unattached on my own, and my father had a lot to do with that. He kept me online training wise, just keeping me in shape, just ready to run a PR, if I wanted to go to a different school, and hopefully they can recruit me and I can run a faster time than my previous 157 PR. So things were challenging at community college, but mentally I just wanted to stay resilient, because I still had dreams of running fast and things like that. So after community college, Division One still wasn't quite the answer for me because my GPA wasn't quite eligible yet. It was much better, but it wasn't quite eligible yet. So what I did was transfer to another junior college, but this time with a pretty good track team. So this college was called South Plains College. I think a lot of people heard of this college. It's a juggernaut track squad for a JUCO, and it was a great opportunity there. It was in Leveland, Texas, so it was kind of like there wasn't much distraction there. So I think honestly that was perfect for me, and I kind of like tucked in, got my grades together, trained hard, and I actually won an indoor championship there, an 800, ran 153 indoors. Oh, and by the way, before I got to South Plains, I was able to get my 800 meter PR down to a 151, and that was much thanks to my father, and that was also much thanks to my AAU club team, Mount Airy. So shout out to those two. So yeah, South Plains won indoor championship. Graduated out of South Plains, and I thought at that time, yes, now it's finally time to go to a top D1 school. I'm thinking Texas A&M, I'm thinking Florida, I'm thinking Alabama, schools like that. But at the time, a lot of schools were telling me even like a 151 wasn't, good enough that year. There was a lot of runners in a D1 program that was under 150, 147, 148. And it's a little different since I'm not, coming right out of high school. So wasn't heavily recruited there. And then I also found out that I couldn't go D1 no more because there is a time eligibility factor where if I spend too many semesters at any school, then your time actually runs out and you can't go D1 no more. So I had, I think I had like a semester or two left, which is, it's basically not enough to, try to get a scholarship package and things like that. So my next best step was Division II. So now we're going into my last college. I got recruited to a school called Texas A&M Kingsville, which is located in Kingsville, Texas, South Texas, which is, to me, I feel like was a really good opportunity there. I loved it at Kingsville, honestly. Yeah, don't let people tell you Division I is the only answer, because I mean, I found my way. I found my way at each school, to be honest. But at Kingsville, I was finally healthy. I was ready to break my 151 PR, and the coaches worked well with me. And I kind of like the, I don't want to say one-on-one focus, but I felt like the coaches were able to focus on me more, since it was a Division of two program. I felt like there was, less athletes on the Division of two level, so I was able to get that focus more so on me. And I ended up dropping my time down to a 148 now. So that was pretty exciting. And I think when I got my time down to a 148, I was like, okay, I think I can really, make a run for this pro thing. So at that time, I had one more year at Texas A&M Kingsville. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna smash this year. I'm gonna do my thing. I'm gonna try to get down to 146, 145, and just like, be one of the best Division II runners in history, and just go professional right after that. So we were trying to, figure out a plan for that. Trained hard in the fall semester at Kingsville, only to find out I can't compete at college no more. And I think the reason for that was, so Division II has a thing where I can only have so many full-time semesters or something like that. It was something complicated. I can't even think of the full reason why, but another factor hit me. So at that point in time, I was kind of devastated, because I thought that was the only opportunity, for me to drop my time down again. And I almost thought it was over. And my father, again, helped me out. We're just trying to figure out plans and stuff, and maybe we can, train unattached and things like that. So I ended up staying at Kingsville for the spring semester. So now we're at the spring semester of 2018. So I ended up staying at Kingsville for the spring semester, just to still pursue my education, but at the same time, I'm still training with Kingsville's track team, just to stay in shape, just to still try to have a season, and still reach my goals to become a professional. So things kind of worked out where I had a good training session in Kingsville for the spring semester, and then after that, I ended up moving back home to Philadelphia, which was, I didn't think was going to be my plan at all, to move back home to Philadelphia. I thought if I wanted a real shot to become a professional, then there probably wasn't much opportunity in Philadelphia. But then me and my father had a good idea of this coach named Derek Thompson, who coaches the likes of IJ Wilson, Charlene Lipsey at the time, Raven Rodgers at the time. So we thought about them, and we actually got to that group through like networking. I mean, we knew of somebody that trained with Derek Thompson, Alfredo Santana. He ran for Puerto Rico. We kind of knew him, and he kind of like opened the door for us to try to, experience that and talk to Derek Thompson and try to get through that group. So I was able to, have the opportunity to train with a professional group, as soon as I left Kingsville that spring semester 2018. So I continued my training that year, started to feel, really fit, really good. And when I got home and started competing in the summer, I just started dropping my time down. So I got my time down to a 147 at a local meet. It was like 147 two something, 147 two five. No, it was 147.4, and I think the USA standard was like a tad bit faster, like maybe like 0.2 faster. So I ended up trying to register for USA's, and I was one of the last spots to make it. So it was, that was pretty exciting. Well, I didn't think I was going to make USA's that year, but dropping my time down to 147, that granted me the opportunity. I believe I was like the 20th spot out of 32. So we made USAs. Didn't have much goals going into it, but I just knew I was going to give it my all. My all. Like, this is a great opportunity. I don't know what this is going to look like. You know, first time really competing against like top tier professionals. I don't know what's going to happen. So, but I kept my mind open, and just took it day by day. So the first day I ended up qualifying to the semifinals by running 147.0. So I PR'd on that round. And you know, which was pretty exciting stuff. And semifinals, it was just, you know, same mindset, just do what we can do, put ourselves in the best position. I mean, Derek Thompson gave me a great plan going into it, and I ended up making the finals actually, and dropping my time down again to 146.46 in the 800, which is actually my PR now. So that was exciting as well. And then the finals, I ended up placing eighth, and ended up making a team actually. So that year there was a team that made called USA versus Europe, which was a great opportunity for me. I was able to represent my country. So yeah, that year was pretty much a movie. It was very exciting. That kind of opened the door into my professional career. And one more thing, I'm sorry, that year was 2019, not 2018. So 2018 going into the 2019 year, I trained with Kingsville and then transitioned into the professional ranks on that year.
That is just such an exciting story. It's you're so inspirational. And I was going to ask you like how you navigated all of these roadblocks and changes, but you used a word that told me a lot about you and what you might tell us right now. You used the word factor. This became a factor, not a roadblock, not an obstacle. You called it a factor. Tell me a little bit about how you view challenges and how you might view change that has helped you be so successful.
So I think a certain point in my life, I accepted the fact that adapting, changing, obstacles, all of that stuff is life, is a part of life, no matter what you do, whether that's track and field, whether that's pursuing an education, whether that's being a doctor, a lawyer, having a family, even, you know, just everyday miscellaneous activities. It could be something like going to the supermarket. You know, it might be closed, so you have to change and adapt to go to a different supermarket you wasn't planning to go to. So, you know, so I look at that as a way of life, and it's like, okay, how can we attack this way of life to be the most successful person that, you know, I want to be? And thank you for addressing that word factor. I haven't even like it didn't even register that I call it a factor, but as I think about it and analyze how, you know, how I view change and things like that, it's exactly how I view it. It's a factor, and it's up to you know, to fight through it, to push through it. And I feel like that depends on your willpower, that depends on your resiliency. That depends on your passion for whatever you're doing. And personally, to me, the most important word and description to that, to get through things like that, is patience. I feel like in a lot of careers, and as a student, as an athlete, you have a lot of people that, you know, aren't patient enough, you know, because they don't get results, you know, at the matter of time they want. But like I said, life doesn't work like that. And you can have these goals, and you can know you're capable of these goals, but you don't know what plan is set out for you, you know? So I kind of take that with a grain of salt, as the kind of seasons I had in college, the professional seasons I have, you know, the past few years. And I just take that as like, okay, how bad do you want this? And I look at that as in a way, it's like a timeline. So, if it doesn't happen this year, we want to tuck in and get ready for next year. So it's just, I think it's a mental strength you need to have. I think patience is one of the greatest mental strengths you can have, because if you're resilient enough, if you're patient enough, you know, to go through the training, the rigorous training every day, of every week, of every month, of every year, just to go through that, just to get the results you want, then I feel like you can do pretty amazing things.
Yeah, and you have. You're a testament to that. It's so
Appreciate
cool
that.
to hear. Yeah, I really am excited to have our audience hear your story, and it's such a special year too, and seeing all these things that are coming up and to be able to follow you in this journey that you're on. It's really inspiring and really cool. I'm learning a lot from you right now. Is there anything more you want to touch on after college? I know that you've had change recently and joining a new pro team. Can you talk us through that?
Yes, so kind of dipped into it a little bit. So 2019, I've had the wonderful opportunity to train with Derek Thompson, who I said at that time who was training IJ Wilson, who still trains there now, Charlene Lipsey, Raven Rodgers, Sammy Watson was there at a brief moment. So I had the likes of training with Derek Thompson, which was a wonderful opportunity. In 2019, I ended up qualifying for the USA Championships, making the US final, and making a US team, which like I said, was just like a movie for me. I was on cloud nine that year, so that was pretty amazing. And so yeah, so I stuck with Coach Derek. I stayed in Philadelphia from 2019 up until 2022. So about a year and some change ago, right after the 2022 season. So that was a great opportunity as well. Like I said, my PR now is still 146.46, and everything was going well there. I just felt like, and also I don't know how I forgot to mention this, but after the 2019 season, I had the wonderful opportunity to be sponsored by a brand called D'Adore. So that is an Italian company based in Europe, who's trying to push the envelope of running in the US. So that was kind of a great opportunity as well. And I want to say, years into that, I kind of felt like I needed a change. First things first, I didn't have any training partners. And it was kind of that was kind of the story of my life. And I always would talk to my dad about this, and I would say, we'll always wonder, how good I can be if I had training partners. I never really had training partners in college. I had probably two great training partners in the whole span of my college career. And in Philadelphia, working out professionally, I didn't really have a training partner. I probably briefly had a training partner, Russell Dinkins, for about a couple weeks. So yeah, after that, I ended up training by myself, and there was a couple guys who came in and out, but never really stuck. So I was basically by myself that whole time. So I think that was one of the main things that made me think, okay, I need training partners. And I think just a different change of environment. Being in Philadelphia, I grew up in the inner city of Philadelphia, and everything just kind of felt comfortable there, I mean, it's easy to get back into the regular social life that you've endured when you were younger. It's easy to live the life that you had before becoming a professional. So not to say I did that, but I did feel the comfortability of that upset life, basically. So I mean, with all those factors and just trying to find that kind of opportunity, it was a no-brainer to think of, my compatriots, down the street in Baltimore, Maryland, just a 2-hour drive away. I compete against those guys all the time. So there's a group in Baltimore, Maryland, now called Mission Run Baltimore 800. So it's a pretty deep group, and it has a lot of guys on the team who's like really, really fast, like 144, 145, 146 guys. And I compete against these guys all the time, so I know how good they are, and I know how competitive, and I know how passionate they are about the sport. So there was a no-brainer, thinking about that group, when it comes to training partners. So, and also, the head coach of that team is my head coach now, Tom Brumlick. I was very we knew each other well, as we always kept in contact with each other, trying to run the same races with his athletes, and us trying to link up and connect to run races together. So we was very familiar of each other, so it was kind of a no-brainer, texting Tom Brumlick and trying to see what that would look like, trying to get opportunity there. And after having a conversation with him, I mean, I don't know if it was just something in my heart or like, you know, God speaking to me or whatever, but it just felt so right at the time. Like I have a bunch of training partners I can now, you know, go to war with every day. I have the opportunity to be sponsored by Under Armour, which you know, they gave me the one wonderful opportunity to sign a contract with them. I had better resources in Maryland, so they had we're basically training at Under Armour's headquarters, so we basically have all that we need there. We have state-of-the-art weight room, Olympic lifts, things like that. We have our own track that they literally just built, which was an amazing thing. And also the recovery aspect, we have a massage therapist who, you know, gives us weekly massages as well. So, I mean, everything just sounded too good to be true. And I mean, at that point, I was just basically waiting for the green light. And once I got the green light, I wasted no time. And, you know, after the 2022 season, just basically moved to Baltimore. And yeah, like everything was downhill after that. You know, it like I said, everything just seemed like a great fit. And I'm training there now, and things are going wonderful.
Yeah, that's really amazing, and how that all came together for you. But it's not accidental. It's because you're very open, from what I perceive, Robert. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you're open to life changing. And some things are factors that you need to navigate in order to continue to do your best. But there's also opportunities and change you're seeking out, like finding training partners. What are some other opportunity type changes have you looked for, or do you want to flesh out what you've already spoken?
Oh, sure. Yes. So, as that if that wasn't change enough, I have some more change for you. As I mentioned in Philadelphia, things seemed a little bit comfortable, just being in Philly. So basically all I was doing was just training professionally, which is like it's not all you're doing because training professionally, that's 24/7 job, that's a full-time job. But at the same time, it's like, how can I push my experiences and what I do to the next generation? And this was always a passion of mine. So it just kind of worked out. Like moving to Baltimore, it just kind of like clicked in my head, okay, let's do this now then. So it kind of just worked out. And you know, Tom Brumlick, Tom was telling me that a lot of his athletes are coaches. And, you know, I was kind of aware of that. And we were just trying to find the best situations for that. And, you know, it came to, you know, we got to the conversation where it was just like, yeah, like I always wanted to coach and I love to coach. So it was kind of like, why not do it now? And so as I was making to move the move to Baltimore, Maryland, I was also applying for coaching positions, and I had the wonderful opportunity to get hired by a private high school called Archbishop Curley, and been coaching there basically as soon as I moved to Baltimore in 2022, and I'm coaching there now. I actually have to go to practice later today and coach those wonderful group of boys, and they're just so much fun to be around. I mean, they have their own passion with the sport, and they enjoy the sport as well. And I love pushing my experiences, my knowledge, you know, to those guys, and they just eat it all up. So they love being here every day, and I just love watching them progress and improve. I mean, their personal best has just been shattered like every time they step on a track, you know. So I've been very exciting and had the humble opportunity to coach these kids, and it's been an amazing experience.
That's awesome. They're so lucky to have you. That is super cool.
I appreciate it.
As I hear of all of these changes that you've had, what of these changes, you can speak to any of them. You can speak to the college experiences, the pro experiences, coaching. How has change helped you grow, and in what ways?
Oh, so many ways. I mean, mentally, physically, emotionally, but just speaking on like the mental aspect and going back to the word resiliency, I think that's something I had no choice to be, and I had to have a lot of grit. I had had a lot of resiliency to get to this point. I mean, just, you know, things not working well in Temple. I mean, the way my grades wasn't working out in Temple, like, you would think I wouldn't even come back to college and even, like, you know, pursue an education. And I ended up doing that and becoming eligible again for track. So that was a big change for me. And that just kind of spoke things on me. I think at that moment, I think that was probably my most rock bottom moment. After that first year at Temple University, just like, okay, I don't got it together, basically, you know? So, like, grades, like, I need to get my grades together. And then it kind of hit where, like, I might not have a real opportunity to, you know, continue my career in track and field. So I think when that kind of hit, it all kind of registered for me, and it just, something clicked in my mind where it's just like, okay, I got to get my grades together. I got to get myself together. And I think from then on, it was just kind of like a process where, like, I was just improving more and more mentally each year. So that was kind of a big thing for me. And now I'm just at the point where it's just like, okay, there's an obstacle, no problem. Like, we're going to get through it. Like, we always get through it. You know, I've dealt with much harder things, and, you know, just experiencing those really hard challenges makes, like, everyday problems or, like, you know, obstacles, like, not having the results you wanted, it seems like nothing to me now. So it's just like, it's just another day, honestly. And I'm now, like, yeah, call me crazy, but now I'm kind of excited for the obstacles, because I'm thinking, like, once I get through it, I'm either going to be mentally, emotionally, or physically stronger, or some combination of the three.
And that is the victorious mindset.
Yes.
Because resiliency with rigidity often leads to being broken.
Mm-hmm.
And while we can put the pieces together and there's always healing in that, like, what's really great and what I'm hearing from your story, which is a fabulous takeaway, is having adaptability and flexibility within that resilience that allows for you to move through life and all of its challenges and factors, I should say, factors, and grow, which is, that's like, this is not just running here that we are talking about. We're talking about life and succeeding at life. So these are incredible takeaways for our audience, for me, as we enter this, like, new year 2024 with everything that it might entail. There will be challenges, there will be factors, and growing and moving in that is such an important thing. Now, if someone is experiencing some factors, some challenges
love it
today, what would you say to them, Robert?
Be patient first and foremost. Got to start with that word. Be patient. Know your time is coming. Know that at the end of the storm, there's always a rainbow. There's always the sun. There's always a sunny day, and, you know, things like that. You just have to get through this obstacle. It doesn't last forever, but once you get through it, you will be stronger. So just know when the obstacles come, just use it as a test to yourself. Like, okay, how willing am I to get through this task, to get through this problem? Like, am I really passionate about this specific thing that I do? And if you can answer yes to those questions, come on, let's get through this obstacle. Let's get through it, you know, and let's be patient, and let's not think about the fact that I may or may not, you know, get the results I want after this, but just know that you're putting in your daily deposit. And when obstacles come, it's an even bigger deposit, because now you're growing yourself. You got through this obstacle that kind of, like, messed with you, that kind of broke you down a little bit, because now you think you can't reach your goals. But hey, I got something to say for you. To reach a goal, you're going to have to get through some obstacles. There's just no way around it. You can't get around the barrier. You can't go under the barrier. You can't jump over the barrier. The only way is through. And I kind of set that up because that's Under Armour's slogan. The only way is through.
Perfect. They're going to love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Most motivational version of their tagline ever.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how I just did that, but that it went perfectly.
Yeah. You had talked about deposits and putting deposits in, and I love how you see it that way too, that these factors and challenges and obstacles are actually making you stronger. You putting in deposits, it's going to make you an even more resilient and adaptable human being. And Robert, this has been a pleasure. We've loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh man, this was great. This was definitely the moment of this week. Yeah, I love talking to y'all, and thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks again. Great to hear from Robert. Appreciate you sharing your time. So here in the World of Running segment, we've got a few things to talk about, but I have to provide a caveat that at the time you're hearing this, we are likely in Orlando already or thereabouts, starting to get ready for the Olympic Marathon team trials. And I'll be competing in that event on February 3rd. I think that's what it is, February 3. It's sometime soon. And so we're going to be excited to share with you. We're going to bring back the next time you hear from us, Andy will be back. We'll be together talking about that experience. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I hope it's going to be a lot of fun. That's the plan. But the point is, some of what I'm about to share with you is pre-recorded. The World of Running segment here may not include some of the results that it ought to include because there's a lot going on in the recent weekend here, and we are not able to record this after some of those things. So there you go. I just peeled back the curtain, which you're not really supposed to do with these kinds of things, I guess, but I'm doing it anyway. So excited to be able to share with you next week, and if we have to update a few results with some more information, we're certainly going to do that, and then spend some time talking about the Olympic trials and how that race went down. Let's start, though. We do have some interesting news to share. First, let's start with Addie Wiley. You recall, we've been talking about her a lot in the last year, and deservedly, because Addie Wiley has been shocking at least the U.S. distance running scene with some just really uncanny performances and paths to those performances. So not unexpectedly, Addie Wiley has signed a professional contract with Adidas, and that's what instigated this reflection. NAIA phenom, did not run NCAA, ran 1 year and a half at Huntington University. Huntington University? I think it's university, at Huntington. And she there achieved so many standout things that was able to move up to the pro scene she's what, 20 years old? So Addie Wiley achieved all of the things we're about to say before turning 20 years old. And that's part of what's just incredible here. Not very often you get a pro contract with one of the major brands at such a young age. But here's the reason, and it's not going to surprise anyone. She ended high school. June of her senior year of high school, she broke the 1600 meter high school record in the United States. She ran 4:26. Incredible. That's just amazing. Later that summer, she finished fifth at the World Under 20 Championships in the 1500. Fifth. And so top five World U20 is amazing. That's incredible. But then moving on, as a freshman at Huntington in the indoor national meet, she won five national titles at one meet. That's in 2 days, people. Well, I guess it could be three. I don't know. No, it's 2 days. Okay, so she won five titles, four of them individual titles. She won events from the 600 meter up to like the 3,000. I mean, she just won everything. 600 to 1 mile or something, and a relay in there. So that was an incredible meet. And that, for a lot of people, is like, okay, this is not a fluke. But the NAIA is a weak division. I'm confident that I can say that without offending anyone, because it just is the truth. By design, you could say. The NAI collegiate division is not part of the NCAA network. There's the three NCAAs, and then there's the NAI as the main collegiate athletics divisions. And NAI schools, by nature, are smaller schools, lower budgets, all that kind of stuff. And so it's a more competitive opportunity for less standout athletes, certainly. But Addie Wiley was not a less standout athlete. She had originally signed with Colorado, in fact, and retracted that commitment to run at Huntington, which was her hometown. So she just wanted to kind of stay close to home. Well, goes on to, let's keep moving on. Addie Wiley then moves on through the season. In the outdoor championships, I think she won the 800 and the 1500 at the NAI championships, a couple individual titles there. She ran the U.S. indoor championships, I forgot to mention, finished fourth in the 1500 in the U.S. indoor championships at 19 years of age. And then in the U.S. outdoor championships, she finished fifth in the 1500, which is by far a more competitive race, and still top five. Just incredible. But then she goes on in the summer. She starts competing in Diamond League races. She starts touring the world. And everyone's thinking, like, what is going on here? Addie Wiley goes on to run 157 in the 800 meters, which is only just the only reason it's not a collegiate all-time best is because Athing Mo, who's one of the best ever in the world, ran faster as a collegiate. Athing Mo is like, you know, the poster child for phenom middle distance runners. But Addie Wiley did something Athing Mo did not do, which is not only ran 157 to 800, she went on later that summer to run 359 in the 1500 meters. There are no runners who have run 157 and 359 at her age in the United States ever. So 359 faster than the collegiate record in of all divisions in the 1500. She's not going to, of course, get the collegiate record, all sorts of reasons, but incredibly fast and world-class competitive edge all summer long. And she was still a teenager. So we like to say professional contracts are more about timing than anything else. It's like you have the right moment and all the opportunity, the doors open wide for you. But if you don't step through it, that door may never open again. So for Addie Wiley to sign a contract right now, not surprising, and she definitely should have. I'm surprised that she actually didn't earlier. Maybe she didn't have offers yet, or maybe they were trying to work out some things with multiple offers. Who knows? But the point, I'm sure she had multiple offers, by the way. Absolutely, no doubt, every single major brand wanted Addie Wiley. But Adidas gets the scoops are up. I'd be interested to know what the contract is as far as duration, because I'd be shocked if it wasn't like a four-year deal or something. I mean, Adidas is probably sitting there saying, young phenom like this, we want her for a full Olympic cycle, not just, you know, the 2024, which she is certainly going for it and going to try to make the team, but more to come. So there's Addie Wiley for you. That's the update. She's now running professional. Indy Star reporting that she's got all the world in front of her, despite some fascinating past, an uncommon path here, and we'll continue to follow closely how that progresses. Next up, let's talk about the Boston indoor meet, which is part of what I said earlier. I'm going to have to update these results because this is only half of the meet when I'm sharing these results with you. There's more still races to come, but I can't talk to you after they have happened. So we've got the men's races, and then we'll have to see how the women do too. I'm very excited about it. The Boston meet, at this point, it's the Terrier Classic. This one is swiftly becoming one of the most competitive indoor track meets in the world. It's already been one of the most, but it's like branded itself now as the place you gotta go. So here's what happened, and this is just insane. So we've got the men's 5000 meter. First of all, they ran two fast heats, which was fascinating. There's a whole bunch of debate on Let's Run's message boards about, like, you know, the On Athletics Club guys were dodging some of the competition that they don't want to run against, so they requested their own meet or their own heat. Apparently Dathan did request, coach at On Athletics Club did request all of his guys were in the same heat, but the decision to have two separate fast heats was the race director. And apparently the rationale being there's so many fast people seated that he wanted more opportunity for qualification and things, which happens to be more likely if it's not too busy, too full of a race, right? So if you split them up a bit more, then you might get, like, you know, a handful of some and a handful of others where you might not have gotten quite as many in one heat together. I think that's the rationale. I don't know for sure. That's just what some of those who had a little bit more insider knowledge were reporting. But the point is, it was fast. It was just as fast as you'd expect. And, well, not, I guess not necessarily just as fast, because some people thought maybe there was an American record potential here. But either way, Nico Young did the thing. And there have been a lot of doubts around Nico Young. He's one of the most accomplished high school runners of all time, and yet seemed to not really totally land in college. Like, a lot of great achievements, but not like superstar status necessarily. But he's kind of been putting that to rest lately, and this is just sealing the deal. Nico Young ran 12:57 in the 5,000 for a new collegiate NCAA record, which was only several weeks old when Graham Blank set it in December. So Nico Young, new collegiate record, youngest American ever under 13 minutes, and he just smashed it at that. Just incredible. But he didn't even win the race. And so everyone's talking about Nico Young because, you know, that NCAA record like that is just crazy. But Adrian Wildschut of South Africa won the race. Now, he's a professional runner, so not a record in that same sense. But he set a new South African national record to run 12:56. It was his first time under 13 minutes, I think. Now that I'm thinking about it, I can't recall exactly. It was a big PR for him, though. Won the heat, fastest time of the day, not just in his heat, and just really looking solid. This guy's one to be thinking about. He runs for Hoka NAZ Elite, so you see him in a lot of these kinds of races, and it's just it's exciting. Now, there's another fast heat, as mentioned, that actually happened first, and so the big news might be those two setting records, but in the other fast heat, there's a lot of stuff going on. So we have the OAC guys all running together, On Athletics Club guys, whole bunch of them there. They're trying to run the Olympic standard, which is 13:05, and it did not go the way that people expected. In fact, the winner of the heat was a surprise victory, and it was Edwin Kurgat, who's from Kenya, and he won over the OAC guys, having essentially never, like, the reflection is, what's the, like, accomplishments that he has to prelude this? And the answer is, well, he won a cross country title, but that's cross country. What's he done on the track? Well, now he's run 12:57 is the answer to that. Out kicks, not the OAC guys who are kind of getting buried at the end of it, but the British miler, George Mills, who is an impressive miler, very fast finishing speed. And it was 12:57 to 12:58 for the two of them. That looks good. George Mills, being a miler specialist, running a 12:58, getting his Olympic standard, opens some doors. Because in Great Britain right now, if you want to make the Olympic team in the 1500, you have to be a potential champion, gold medalist. And why do I say that? Well, first of all, because Jake Whiteman and Josh Kerr are the two most recent world championship gold medalists, both from Great Britain. If Whiteman's healthy, I mean, he wasn't healthy last year, but he's healthy. Both of them are world-class, you know, top of the line. But they're not even the only ones. So it's, you have to be so fast in Britain to run in the 1500 right now on their team. And so George Mills is opening some doors for himself. Now, of course, the assumption is that he's going to stick with his specialty, but maybe not. Maybe this 5,000 has greater consideration. Well, Kurgat, breakthrough performance, runs 12:57, both of them with an Olympic standard. But Yared Nuguse ran a big personal best, even though he was back in third, ran 13:02, still an Olympic standard, personal best. He's not a 5,000 guy, but as we like to say, you shouldn't ever make excuses, because someone who can run 3:43 in the mile should also have a decent 5,000. So that's kind of the way it goes. Nuguse apparently was making moves in the last 800 meters or so, but he didn't have the big moment. So we got in one race, five men ran under 13 minutes. We just shared a few of them there. There was one more in the second heat, and 11 men ran the Olympic 5,000 standard of 13:05 in one meet. That's just incredible. And so that's why you get, so if 11 people run 13:05 or faster in the same heat, that's tough. That's harder because, you know, you're strung out and things like that, but it's much more likely. That's why the race director split the heats, I'm sure. Notably, there were a few not as amazing performances, and you kind of expected, you know, expected something and didn't see quite what you expected. Joe Klecker didn't have quite the day. Didn't look wonderful. Morgan McDonald, also of the On Athletics Club, Didn't have a stellar performance. But Woody Kincaid was the big surprise, just not running like himself a little bit further back in his heat. Brian Fay also, he's a 13-minute guy, and he wasn't quite there this time around. So we'll look for some women's results next time. We can update you on that. But on the other side, the men's mile also happened recently here and was really kind of surprising and in an exciting way. First of all, Colin Salmon won the race. He's from NAU. He's a young guy. He was a high school star and then has not quite landed major performances yet, but that's to be expected, you know, early in college. Well, he won the race. He ran a 3:53 mile. Very strong performance as a collegian and a young one at that. Craig Engels, though, looked decent running 3:54. Craig Engels has constantly been trying to make a comeback from a pretty major season disruption he had some years ago, but this looked pretty good. That's always a good look when Engels is running 3:54. And I got to give a shout out to my man, Isaac Updike, who's a steeplechaser, but has some good mile speed, ran 3:55. Very strong effort. It's always good to see. So there you go. The BU meet is ongoing as I'm reporting this with you, and we'll have to share more of the results for the women's races after they have happened when we come back with you next week. Now, last thing I want to share here, this is really interesting. We've got the Olympics coming up, 2024 Summer Games, and there are some fascinating statistics around these Paris Games, and I want to share it to you like this. From small to large, it's a really curious progression. This was reported by Inside the Games website, and you can certainly find more at their website about it. But here's what we've got. 32 sports are included in this year's Summer Olympics. 32 sports. That then means 329 events. That's a lot more than I would have guessed. When you tell me the Olympics, I wouldn't think 329 different events, but that's it this year. Of those competing, there are 203 nations represented, which is funny to me because I was under the impression there weren't that many sovereign nations, politically speaking, in the world. But that's, you know, my ignorance. I have to go back and actually like look it up again. I saw that number and I was like, really? How is that? Well, I guess it must be. Okay, so there's that. Lots of countries represented, and that's always exciting. There are 10,500 athletes expected. That's a lot of people participating in those 329 events. That's really something. In order to hold integrity in the sports, there are 6,000 doping tests to be administered. That's a funny statistic. That's going to take a fair bit of effort on the volunteer side. So in order to achieve that goal, there will be 30,000 volunteers helping with the games. 30,000. That's something. But there's more. In order to keep everybody safe and sound, there's intended to be 40,000 security personnel and 15,000 military personnel involved in keeping everyone safe during the games, which is really saying something. But how about who's attending? Attendees are expected to tally in the totals of 15 million spectators. And 2 million of those 15 from abroad, somewhere outside of France. And so that's a lot of people. A lot of people coming into France, a lot of people in France watching the games. 500 of those, by the way, are expected to be in attendance in person to watch the opening ceremony. That's 500,000 people at the opening ceremony. I don't know how that's possible, but That's what they expect. Now, all of these, of course, are anticipated because it hasn't happened yet, but that's the way it goes. And in order to keep those millions of people satiated and alive, they got to be fed. Well, there's an anticipated 13 million meals, snacks, etc., to be served. Now, you say to yourself, well, if there's 15 million people and only 13 million meals served, that's like not even a meal per person. Yes, but they're not all eating at the venue. That's the games venues themselves supplying 13 million meals. That's something. They expect about 3 million bananas to be involved in that, which I found to be a really funny statistic. I don't know why that matters, but it's funny. And to cap it all off, who's watching from home, streaming live? Well, they expect 1 billion people streaming the games live. I don't know how accurate that anticipation is. That sounds like a lot, but I also haven't really ever tried to pay attention to those statistics before in the Olympic Games, but that's it. Conclusion, it sounds like the Paris Games are going to be a wild success. This could be a bit of like, you know, self-fulfilled prophecy. They're trying to make it the case, so they make it sound like it's going to be the case, and then more likely to be, yeah, who knows? But my point is, those are huge numbers, and it's really kind of fun to see. And we're looking forward to the Summer Olympics, as we always do, and we'll have to see how much of that proves to be true. So with that, we are sad to have to end our time with you without Andy today. But hopefully, because she was able to conduct the interview, you got a little bit of a little bit of time with Andy. That's good. And next time you hear from us, we're both going to be back together to share with you from the Olympic trials experiences. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And at that, thanks for listening. And we look forward to talking with you again next week.